everyone. It's your host, Polly Siegel. And for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, certified addiction specialist, and master level trained mindfulness practitioner. I own a counseling practice in both Colorado and Illinois, and I specialize in trauma, OCD, and anxiety. If you live in either of those two states, feel free to reach out to me for a consultation and we can begin the therapeutic journey together. Now on to the good shit. Welcome to season 3 of Shit Talking Shrinks. Gosh, I'm so excited. I will be featuring experts in the healing space, and we're discussing a variety of mental health topics, the human experience, and society at large, while creating levity along the way. Get ready to laugh, learn a lot, and change your life for good. Hello, everyone. Another fabulous episode on Shit Talking Shrinks. I have a fabulous guest today. All my guests are fabulous, but I've really been looking forward to this one in particular. Today, we have Chelsea Horton. She's a relationship anxiety specialist and a body-mind integration expert, as well as the CEO of Healing Embodied. Lots of claims to fames. Welcome, Chelsea.
Hi. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so relationship anxiety is obviously something that so many people experience within their romantic partnerships, probably also in friendships and relationships with family. For the purpose of this episode, we're going to focus on romantic or intimate relationships. How did you get into specializing in this department?
Well, it was something that I experienced for probably the first 2 years solid in my relationship. I didn't really know that like relationship-specific anxiety was a thing. I just knew I was so anxious and obsessive about my relationship and just so fearful about commitment. And it wasn't until years later that I stumbled upon the term relationship anxiety that I was like, oh, that's what younger me was experiencing. That was so debilitating for her. The work that I had done with that anxiety is what got me through it. Even though it's like I didn't have the specific term yet, I knew that what I was experiencing was so painful and so debilitating. And the somatic work that I did was the thing that got me through it. And so I was like, oh, this is all coming together now. Like the thing that I got my degree in is the thing that helped me get through this thing. And now I'm learning that so many people experience this. So to be able to take my training, my expertise, and my personal experience and help others through that has just been the coolest thing.
And creating an entire practice, Healing Embodied, centered around this, helping so many other people learn the tools, learn the management skills, learn how to be able to thrive even when anxiety is present, is a gift to all of us. I actually haven't ever shared this with anyone on the podcast, but I have struggled with relationship OCD. I also know what it's like to be obsessive and get into these thought loops that I can't get out of and feel all encompassed, and it just hijacked my fucking life. And it's awful. Like, let's just like acknowledge the deep pain that comes along with relationship anxiety.
Oh my gosh. The word hijacked is such a perfect word because it feels like it just takes over your body, mind. And for me, it felt like I was drowning since I didn't know what it was. You believe that it's so real. You believe these like really dark, scary, obsessive thoughts, which makes it feel all the more debilitating. Just like so much paralysis. Like I couldn't just enjoy the relationship or just see how it was going to unfold. There was so much rumination and obsession that really got in the way. And it wasn't even just something that impacted my relationship. It impacted like my free time. Like it was all that I was thinking about. And it's really, really debilitating.
You know, for some listeners who have heard the term ROCD or relationship OCD versus relationship anxiety, in your mind, what are the differences if people are trying to suss that out?
For me personally, I use relationship anxiety as more of the like broad umbrella term, but you know, with OCD, OCD stands for obsessive compulsive disorder. There is this element of like these obsessive thought loops. Like you said, your mind kind of latches onto a particular aspect or aspects of the relationship and just ruminates over, and it's like this broken record. And then because of the distress that these thoughts create, you go into compulsive behavior. So that could even be the obsessive thinking itself, checking your feelings, trying to have certainty. It could also be Googling for advice, asking your friends and everyone under the sun for reassurance. So there's this attempt to try to eliminate the discomfort through these different behaviors.
It can also be mental checking, right? Like rumination is compulsionary in essence, right? Because you're trying to solve, you're trying to figure out, you're trying to gain certainty. You want to have clarity. And so, you know, a lot of people think of compulsions as physical acts, observable acts, but rumination is happening in your mind and no one would be able to know except for yourself. I think that's a beautiful explanation of ROCD. And then how does that differ from relationship anxiety?
I would say relationship anxiety is just like this general feeling of uneasiness and like not being able to really feel fully safe or trusting in relationships. So again, that can look so many different ways. It could be worrying your partner is going to leave you. It can be worrying about commitment, you know, fearing that you're going to end up divorced like your parents did. It's like this general sense of like, I don't trust in relationships. I don't really know how to fully feel this sense of safety in relationships, even really, really wonderful relationships.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a really interesting distinction that the general anxiety in relationships can come out as not feeling safe, not feeling grounded in your relationship, not feeling that like anchoring that we hope to feel, being unsure and just not having specific clarity or certainty. But it doesn't have the same intensity, perhaps, as relationship OCD does. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, possibly. And, you know, again, with the like obsessive compulsive disorder, that particular pattern is the thing that to me like distinguishes it. There's such an intense intolerance of uncertainty with OCD. Like you cannot handle uncertainty, and that's what leads to the compulsions, whether it is mental or more physical outwards.
There's also this element of normalcy when it comes to anxiety in relationships. Like that doesn't necessarily mean disordered. Like I think I also want to just name that like all of us at times have anxiety around our relationship. And that's not necessarily, you know, a crisis. It can just be how we interface with a partner.
It's human, especially like in the beginning stages of a relationship where there is a lot of uncertainty. You know, you're like building this new relationship and that can bring up a lot of uncertainty and that like sense of uneasiness. With OCD, it feels like it gets to this point where it is impacting your daily functioning. And that's really what the word disorder is. It's like this normal human thing. It's so intense that it impacts our daily functioning.
Right. It creates this interference where we're not able to operate or function in our daily responsibilities because it's so overwhelming. It's so all consuming that we are stuck and trapped in it.
I've definitely had clients who for weeks had a hard time feeding themselves, had a hard time going to work. Like it can truly be debilitating. And that's what really differentiates, you know, something like OCD versus like this general sense of anxiety and uneasiness in relationships. Both, you know, equally valid, and we often need support in both circumstances. But that's, I guess, how I would differentiate the two.
Yeah, no, I think that's beautifully said. Now, kind of switching back to just umbrella term, generalized relationship anxiety, how do you see it typically present? Provide listeners with sort of this overview of the ways that it can manifest.
Yeah, it's this like constant questioning about the foundation of the relationship, whether that's, do I really love them? Like, I'm afraid to commit to them. Or do they really love me? What if they leave me? What if they cheat? So there's this like mistrust, again, of the foundation. And then there's this, you know, obsessing about the foundation. Like, how can I make sure we're okay? And that might go into some like controlling behaviors or like, avoidant behaviors where you're like avoiding commitment, or like maybe you get hyper focused on what your partner's doing or what they're saying or what they're feeling, or you get hyper focused on how you're feeling. So it's like, I don't really trust in the foundation of this relationship, even though it's great. And so because of that mistrust or that sense of unsafety, I then go into all these emotional and behavioral responses.
You're not speaking to, you know, betrayal or abandonment or someone that has actually caused real harm. This is when the relationship is functional and healthy and good, but there's still the anxiety present.
To me, a relationship anxiety is a symptom or a manifestation of what's called faulty neuroception. So this is a term by Dr. Stephen Porges, polyvagal theory. Neuroception is your nervous system's ability to automatically, subconsciously detect if something is safe or not. And when we have faulty neuroception, we either perceive unsafe things as safe or safe things as unsafe. And so I feel like relationship anxiety is perceiving safe relationships as unsafe. When our neuroception is accurate and we're in a relationship where there's betrayal, where there's mistreatment, where there's disrespect, where there's emotional neglect, and you feel anxiety, that's an accurate assessment from your nervous system saying, this really isn't safe because of how this person is treating me. This situation is not safe. And therefore, I'm feeling fear as a proper response to avoid danger and threat. And with relationship anxiety is, this is actually overall safe. And yet I'm getting all these false alarms. And my mind is coming up with justification for this sense of alarm. And therefore, like, picking out all these things that could be wrong.
Yes, yes. And I want to echo what you're saying, because a lot of people can miss this. We are not talking about relationships where there's neglect and abuse and betrayal and abandonment, because again, your nervous system is accurately saying, this isn't safe, be on high alert. I know I'm sounding a little bit fierce in that, but this is around relationships where we are safe and our nervous system is sort of misfiring.
Yes, exactly.
I want to take a quick pause to talk about our sponsor, a company called BetterHelp. It's an online therapy platform where all the therapists are licensed and accredited professionals. It's affordable. You pay a low flat fee for therapy with your therapist, and it's convenient. Do it at your own time and at your own pace, and you can communicate with your therapist as much as you want and whenever you feel is needed. And more importantly, it's effective. Thousands of people have benefited from therapy using BetterHelp, and we're really grateful to offer all of our listeners 10% off your first month. So if you're interested in receiving therapy ASAP, click the link in our show notes and you can get started. And you get to save money. What are the reasons as to why a nervous system would miss a tune or misfire in a relationship?
There are so many reasons. And I always say relationship anxiety is like this recipe, and there's lots of different ingredients that go into this recipe. A lot of my clients that I work with, they're like, I want to find the one thing that made me this way. If I could just find the one thing, then it'll all go away. It's like, no, it's often the accumulation of lots of different ingredients, if you will. So one ingredient to this cute little recipe might be like not having healthy relationships modeled growing up, or relationships from your caretakers not feeling safe, where there is chronic misattunement, where there is your needs being dismissed, where there is maybe abuse. It doesn't even have to be abuse. It could even be a critical parent. Again, there's so many nuances here, but first, like, our initial experience of relationships that are modeled to us, there was something amiss there. That's often one experience. It can also be being shamed, bullied, criticized in high school, in middle school, in elementary school, and learning like relationships aren't safe. And when I am seen, I get hurt. When I am seen, I get hurt. And we carry that message with us, that story in our bodies. Some other reasons are wildly unrealistic expectations that are handed to us from society. So we're constantly modeled this ideal of what relationships should look like. And then when we enter into a real relationship and it doesn't look like that, we then go, oh my gosh, something must be wrong, because I've been shown my whole life through Disney movies and rom-coms and social media that this is what a relationship's supposed to look like. Why is mine messy and imperfect? There must be something wrong. Lots of different ingredients.
I think that's a really nice visual that, you know, you've got your eggs and your flour and your cinnamon and all these things create potentially the anxiety that you experience and the anxiety that manifests in the relationship. You know, it's so funny bringing up societal messaging, because society fucks us in a lot of ways. But when you were talking, what I was thinking about was when we, as you know, in the early 2000s, I'm speaking to millennials here, and we were watching, you know, a sexual scene in a movie. The minute that he touches her, she's already moaning and aching and longing. And we're moving right now, so catch our YouTube right now. But like, there's this like, oh my God, and it's like, that ain't how it happens, right? But in that, we internalized that, where it was like, oh, he or she or whoever's touching you, why am I not in this euphoric bliss? Because it's like, well, that's just not how it goes. But it's the same thing of what you're talking about. Society pitches relationships as rainbows and butterflies all the time.
It sells us this fantasy. We were actually talking about this. It's like the relationships we see in movies, you know, sitcoms, social media, the purpose of those relationships is entertainment. These relationships, these characters are created for entertainment. It's not going to show the messy, mundane, boring, imperfect aspects of a relationship, because that's not entertaining unless it's like high drama. And so then we have our real life relationships, which are not always entertaining. And we're like, what the heck? What's wrong? Am I doing this wrong? Maybe this person isn't right for me because I'm not feeling that. Or like, we're sitting next to each other and like we're both on our phones at the same time. Oh my God, what's wrong? We should be having this deep conversation. Or why aren't we fighting more? Like, I want the makeup sets.
You want to know something actually crazy? I have never had makeup sex. Like, ever. Like, my partners after a fight don't want to bang.
Usually after I've, you know, have a disagreement with my husband, I'm like, don't touch me.
I think there's times where I'm like, I want you to just ravish me, but he's never interested after a fight, which I don't know what that says about me.
Or it's like, we're human, and after we're vulnerable and we feel raw, we kind of want to like collect ourselves for a bit, return back to safety before we go into hot and bothered.
Okay, so we have sort of the origins or the ingredients to the recipe here. Walk me through, like, where does someone start if this is their experience? I want to jump into tangible tools or things that people can start doing to help them when they're in this chronic experience.
Like, first, just being aware that that's what's going on. Like, that alone is such a relieving realization and awareness of like, oh my gosh, I'm not broken. My relationship's not broken. It's this thing. And then suddenly this spaciousness or this hope opens up. And from that place of this awareness, this new space that's opened up, you go, okay, so what do I want to do with this? What do I want to do about it? How am I going to approach this? Our clients that work with us get so potentially sick of us saying, get curious. Like, start by getting curious. Instead of, and this takes practice, y'all, takes practice. Instead of automatically buying into every single thought and reaction as face value, get curious. Like, oh, what am I afraid to feel? What am I really afraid of? Where did this belief about relationships come from? Am I placing a should on myself or my partner or my relationship? Like, start looking at the subconscious shoulds, like we were talking about with, like, you know, relationships we see in movies and media. That places this, like, this is how relationships should be and should feel. So start getting curious of, like, what are the shoulds? And get curious, like, what are my experiences of relationships outside of romantic relationships? Like, what was modeled to me by my parents? What was my early relational experience like? Just to start putting the pieces together, or, you know, kind of untangling this big cluster of just anxiety. It's like, okay, oh, I learned this. Oh, I experienced this. And then we want to really start to separate the thought feeling fusions, is what I call them. It's where our thoughts and our feelings are so fused that we truly believe every thought because it's fused with such an intense feeling. So an example might be your partner doesn't text you back immediately. They're out with their friends. Your partner is a trustworthy person, but right now they're like having a friend night. And you say, hey, when are you coming home? It's 10 minutes. You don't get that text. And suddenly you notice your heart starts beating. Your pits start sweating. You get that knot in your stomach. And all at the same time, you're going, oh my gosh, they're cheating on me. Oh my gosh, this is happening. And these like thoughts and feelings start fusing, creating this really, really uncomfortable situation. So in those moments, seeing if you can slow down and just be with the feeling. Like, what am I feeling? My heart is racing. My pits are sweating. My stomach's in knots. What does that feel like? What temperature is that? Like, how big is this feeling? Can I just be with the sensory experience of it versus going down the very dark, scary rabbit hole that my thoughts are bringing me down, which creates more intense feelings? And the next thing you know, you're sending 27 panic texts or calling 47 times, even though they're at a basketball game where it's loud, you know, like, so start to get curious, like, what am I feeling? Can I be with the feeling without buying into every single thought? Take some space to like regulate what I'm feeling.
Yes. Okay. So I feel like this example is very pertinent to what I just experienced yesterday. I will share a little self-disclosure. I recently started talking to someone new. We've been on 4 dates. There's not a lot of certainty or clarity around it. It's the early phases. So I sent a message that I felt was a bit vulnerable, and it was an hour after I sent it and there was no reply. And so I could notice my body starting to tighten. My chest felt tight. My stomach felt like squirrely. I don't know how to describe that, but I could feel this physiological response. And then immediately the narrative or the story that my brain told me was, he doesn't care. He doesn't really care about you, because if he really cared about you, he would have responded, because you just shared something vulnerable and you just shared something that should be responded to promptly, right? And so what happened within a nanosecond is that story, which is the he doesn't care. Now, that's a story that has followed me in dating for a long time, got entangled with that physiological discomfort, and it happened within a nanosecond. And I'm already plotting how I'm going to end it and how this is bullshit and how I don't have time for this and how, oh my God, I'm just so amazing. And if he can't see that, and it's like, whoa, Paulina, whoa.
That is exactly it. And what happens a lot when we're not aware, we're not working on it, is we go, he doesn't care about me. This is how I'm going to end it. When he finally responds, oh, I'm going to rip him a new one. Our brains start coming up with all of these worst case scenarios, because the crazy thing about the mind is it would rather be certain about something horrible than uncertain. So your brain would rather say, I am so certain that this is going to end and that he doesn't care about me, because somehow that is more comfortable than sitting in the discomfort of the unknown.
And it felt relieving to plot how I was going to end it and, you know, what I was going to say. And it felt like comforting to have an exit strategy versus being with the internal experience and getting curious, just like you said, being exploratory, like, this feeling feels familiar. Gosh, I've had that feeling in past partnerships where I don't feel cared about, or I feel unimportant, or I don't feel prioritized. Okay, this is an old feeling that's surfacing. This isn't really about him, right? This is all of what's, you know, what you've been dragging in the suitcase for a long time. And I see your tip is so freaking powerful, that if we slow down and we close our eyes and we get really curious to, where is this coming from? What does it feel like in my body? Can I recognize that my brain is indeed creating a story the he doesn't care or I'm unimportant or I don't matter, because that's not facts. That's not a hard truth. It's not a hard truth because I have no data other than I sent something vulnerable and it's been over an hour.
Your brain is going to come up with the most convincing story. And so getting curious at first is really freaking hard because your brain is telling you, this is the case. You have to like build this curiosity muscle because the brain is so, so convincing. And when you're in that hypervigilant, dysregulated state, all you can see is the negative. All your brain is looking for is the evidence to confirm that this fear story is true. So with curiosity, we actually need to learn to regulate. In order to build that curiosity muscle, we need to simultaneously cultivate our ability to regulate what's happening in our body. Because if you are 10 out of 10 panic, pits are sweating, it's drenching through your shirt, it's getting hot in here. If you're 10 out of 10 panic, every time you try to go, well, that's not actually fully factual, it's not actually fully true, your body's going to be like, you lying. And so like being able to work with your body as well as questioning your thoughts is a really powerful combination that's going to help you access a more grounded wisdom.
And wisdom that comes from a regulated state, because that's the key thing. Like when we're in our window of tolerance, when we feel safe, we feel calm, we feel groovy, we feel like it's all good. That's our window of tolerance. But in a nanosecond, I was already in this fight flight state. And I was really proud of myself because typically or historically, I would have sent a message to kind of be like, hello. I almost think of it as like a poke. Remember on Facebook, you could poke someone? Yeah. Like I wanted to poke him because I was like, I don't want to sit in this. This is horrible. But instead, I did not Facebook poke, metaphorically. I was like, I need to do an inner child meditation because my inner child is feeling scared. And I went into my room and I put my phone in the other room so that I didn't get tempted. She's snapping, folks. And I regulated. And I went in there and I said, I know you're scared. And I know you don't have clarity. And I know you just did something really courageous. And you don't feel like it's being held, but like, I'm going to hold it for you because you sharing that was awesome and you were lovable and wonderful and delicious. And I swear to God, I was able to be fine the rest of the night. Didn't even think about him.
That's it. I'm dancing for
We're dancing on YouTube. Am I A plus student? Tell me I'm an A plus student. Okay, so we have the tools to slow down, be in our body, be curious, ask maybe questions. Where is this coming from? What is this rooted in? When have I felt this in the past? Then what do?
You sit in the discomfort. And if there is an action that really needs to be taken or something that needs to be communicated or a boundary that needs to be expressed, then that action will feel a lot clearer and it will come from a clearer place that will actually have the potential to bring you closer in the relationship versus pushing away or clinging from that fearful place. So after you've regulated and grounded and you really feel into like, do I actually need to poke? Is there actually an action that needs to be taken here? From that clear place, it will be more clear. You know what? I think this is an opportunity for me to communicate X, Y, and Z. Or maybe in your case, it's like, you know what? Let me just go do something to take care of myself as I, you know, wait for this response. So I'm going to go Starbucks and grab a coffee, you know, whatever it is. So either like meeting your own needs or expressing a need to bring you closer in the partnership.
Right. And sometimes, like you said, it's action or sometimes it's inaction. Like you don't need to do anything. You just need to tend to yourself. Anything else that you would add that you feel like is important in this healing journey when we have this chronic anxiety?
Don't do it alone. Anxiety is very convincing. Those old thought patterns are very strong. And it can feel so isolating. And with the isolation comes more shame. And so, like, getting connected to a community or getting support in some way just alleviates some of that unnecessary suffering that we put ourselves through when we say, I'm going to figure this out by myself, or like, I can't talk to anyone else. So just get connected, because relationship anxiety is about relationships. So we heal a relational wound in relationship. Yes, your romantic partnership, but also in community, in a therapeutic relationship, in a professional relationship. So the more you're engaging in relationship, the more you're going to see things start to shift.
Yeah. We're luckily in an age where there's so much community just through social media. And there are, you know, obviously your podcast, your social media, Chelsea, is wonderful and helpful. And all of that will be in the show notes for everyone if you want to have a starting place. But there's a lot of other providers that do amazing work too on relationship anxiety or ROCD. And so we're lucky in that way that we can find community.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, you know, speak to your own tribe, the people that you love and are close and, you know, are not just strangers behind a screen, the people that you trust that you can share these things with. Okay, if this has been relatable, go ahead and share it. If there is a loved one, a friend, a family member that deals with relationship OCD, pass this episode along. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for this discussion. And thank you, Chelsea.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
We'll catch everyone later.